The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 959. It's the 5th of January 2018. On the podcast today, I have Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell. And Russ talks about the following stocks: Redcentric, Affinity, and Theresa. We also know about the economy in 2018 and where he thinks it'll go, etc., etc. Russ is mindful of intellectual prowess, especially on the financial side. He can do macro, he can do micro, he can do anything. Also on the podcast, a market analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talks about companies releasing updates next week, including Majestic Wines, Marks & Spencer, and Boohoo.com. I also have lessons learned from traders and investors, more quotes submitted from traders and investors and what they've learned from the markets. And if you have learned something, then by all means go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog and click the link there and submit your quote, your lesson, something you've learned whilst you've been investing or trading, and I'll share it with everyone listening. Plus, I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell. I assume you're still at that position. It's a new year now, Russ. Maybe a new
yes,
job.
Still clinging on by my fingertips, Justin. I'm pleased to say. So yeah, happy new year to you anyway, mate. Be a successful and prosperous one.
Yes, happy new year to you. And listen, you know, you're a major asset there, so I can't see them getting rid of you until literally you're due to put, you know, push up the daisies, I think, Russ.
Well, after hubris comes nemesis. I'm taking nothing for granted.
Yeah. Do you know Christmas? Yeah, do you know what? I'm not a huge fan because I like what I do for a living. You know, I'm one of those people that are lucky to be in a job I really enjoy. So when I'm forced not to do it because I can't do it, and I have to sit around and pretend to be happy and doing nothing apart from eating and watching TV, which I don't care about, I'm not in a happy position too much. I prefer to do something I enjoy doing. So
no, my kids do call me a bit of a Grinch as well. I mean, I do like Christmas, but I must admit, by the time it actually gets to Christmas, it's like, oh God, it's been in the shop since August. So I tend to be a little bit past myself with it. But the kids loved it. They were happy. And that's the most important thing. And in fairness, like you, I actually did work between Christmas and New Year because I was head down. So, did chatting away. And I actually had the, I was able to do a broadcast on the Radio 4 Today program on December the 27th, early in the morning, with one of their broadcasters on the BBC. Nice. And that was the day that Prince Harry, His Royal Highness, Prince Harry was the guest editor, so I got to meet His Royal Highness.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
So there you go.
And he's come in for a bit of flack about that, hasn't he, about being political?
I don't know why. I don't think he was being political. I think he particularly wanted to talk about, you know, mental health, which is clearly one of the issues he's been campaigning about most vigorously. And actually, one of the questions I got was, you know, do corporations care about mental health? And my answer was, well, physical health, definitely. You read any set of report and accounts, there's always the thing in there. You know, certainly in manufacturing industries, you know, there's been no accidents, these are all the processes we have in place. Mental health? Nah, not really. I mean, there was actually a survey done by Soma Analytics, which talks about, they read all FTSE 100 report and accounts and said that they reckoned a quarter of them did mention mental health and well-being, which obviously meant that three quarters didn't.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It's an odd one. And
well, obviously, your mental health wasn't so good because you weren't working. You were there, you know,
exactly,
itching to get going over Christmas.
I do find my mental health goes down over Christmas. But did you actually speak to himself?
Yes, he actually came into the green room and said hello and was as one would expect for a prince, absolutely charming. So no, he came across as being a truly and you know, truly lovely guy, and he was clearly very passionately committed about the things he'd done. He'd, you know, done the interview with Barack Obama, ex-President Obama. He'd set up lots of interviews and comments on mental health, well-being. He obviously did the interview with his dad, Prince Charles, which was interesting. So, no, he came across it, and he'd been working on that program for months.
Yeah, excellent stuff. I do like him. I do warm to him. I think he's got a bit of character.
Yeah, he came across very well.
He means well. Okay, so have you got any sort of macro predictions for 2018 at all, Russ?
We always get asked for these and things, and we prepared. We from the start of December, we were getting questions on where we thought the FTSE 100 was going to go and interest rates and inflation. So the one that we put in print is that at the start of December, we put out FTSE 100 8,000 as a forecast, which we thought at the time looked pretty bullish because the index was at 72,300. It wasn't going very far. Yeah. And as I sit here talking to you now, it's about 7,700. It doesn't look that bullish at all, but we'll stick to it. That was largely based on the fact that, you know, earnings forecasts are calling for 6 to 8% UK, well, sort of 8 to 9% earnings growth in the UK, 7 to 8% dividend growth. So even without the market re-rating or becoming more expensive, you could get to 8,000 without too much fuss. Yeah. Clearly, the caveat to that is the earnings forecasts have got to be half decent. But at the moment, with commodity prices going up, oil prices going up, that's a good start. You want to see the banks keep their noses clean. And the other big contributor are the consumer staples companies. You know, consumer staples, which is basically fags and booze, and a bit of food retailing. Banks, insurers, oils are basically forecast to chuck in about 70-80% of UK earnings growth this year. Now, oil is obviously somewhat price dependent, but they've taken a lot of costs out. Mm. The banks need to see if they can keep their noses clean and make, you know, we don't want to see the mortgage market go down. And the staples, the bulk of that earnings increase actually comes from British American Tobacco and Imperial Brands going through costs at their recent acquisition. So that should provide a bit of a firm basis. So in that respect, on earnings growth, 8,000 looks achievable, providing, of course, nothing dreadful goes wrong. Economically speaking, and there's no market accident, but all things being equal, that it looks very achievable given we're at 7,700 already. I don't think we want to be any more bullish than that yet, but it does sort of feel like markets kind of want to melt up at the minute. Now, normally, you know, that obviously all sounds very exciting, but when people are getting greedy, you want to be fearful, and when people are fearful, you want to be greedy. So what while we don't give advice to our customers or clients, generally, you know, what we've been seeing in the papers is, look, don't take, just because things look pretty rosy at the minute, don't get lulled into a false sense of security and take more risk than you would do normally. If anything, you want to be thinking more carefully just because people are getting all giddy. But at the moment, at least, the reflation trade is strong and the UK has got a few things going for it. It's underperformed for the last 2 years. It's not expensive relative to its history or its international peers. It's got a fat dividend yield of around 4% on the 100 and about 3.5% on the all share, which still beats cash hands flat. And in theory, the economists keep on telling me how cheap the pound is. So in that respect, it's got a few things going for it. And the latest Bank of America Merrill Lynch Institutional Fund Manager survey showed that fund managers haven't been more bearish on the UK in years with a big underweight position. So in that respect, in a global context, it's almost a bit of a contrarian pick, funnily enough.
Yeah. But do you know, when everything, I mean, apart from that, like I said, JP Morgan there, but when everything's sort of lined up and looking rosy, I always think we haven't priced in yet. And something, obviously, you can't price this in, but you can't price in something coming out of the left field, you know?
No, exactly.
And like you say, sometimes when everything is rosy, and you say you should be fearful, like you say, you know?
It's the old thing. Markets climb the wall of worry and then slide down the slope of hope. And I think last year there was lots of walls of worry to climb. Yeah. Brexit, European elections, general election, minority government, all those, you know, nuclear, North Korean tension, Middle Eastern tension, what President Trump, all of those, and some of those things still apply now, but probably less so than they did a year ago, some potentially more so, like North Korea. So, yeah, once you get to a point when expectations are elevated and you say everything looks hunky-dory, that's actually when markets are at the most dangerous. Yeah. Definitely, I would not be taking any more risk than I would be doing normally. If anything, I'd be thinking, you know, let's keep calm here, not get dragged along, and if anything, maybe take a little bit less risk than you would have done normally. But at the moment, it's looking okay, and you know, obviously we'll enjoy that while it lasts, but yeah, definitely don't let your guard down.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've had a decent 2017, so I'm thinking, I doubt if I'll replicate that in 2018, because it was quite a good year, but yes, there we are. Okay, Russell, what stocks are we looking at, Bella?
We're going to look at updates on two, and we're going to look at the one that we've not looked at together before. So the one we've not looked at together before is Redcentric, and I'm going to do some updates on Zaffinity and Therissa.
Okay, Redcentric, and what's the ticker there, Russ?
RCN. It's quoted RCN on AIM. It became public in 2013 as a spin-off of the managed telecom services businesses from Redstone. I don't know if you remember that one. It was a very acquisitive telecoms and IT services company that was eventually done in by its debts in the great financial crisis. Shares have been on the proverbial roller coaster. Came out at about 80p. Got all the way up to 200 in about mid 2016, and then late 16 the wheels fell off. FCA investigation into its accounting. The CFO left. It turned out that the company had overstated its assets and understated its debt, which is not a fantastic combination. By any stretch of the imagination, and it all looked pretty pretty grim. The CFO's gone, the CEO's gone, and so you've got a new management team. The lenders have proved, the company's banks have proved so far, actually pretty supportive, and the new management team is making the right noises in terms of debt reduction, straightening out all the accounting and the revenue recognition issues. And by the way, I should stress that the FCA investigation, I think, is still ongoing, which probably does mean that this isn't strictly a stock for widows and orphans by any means. Yeah. And they're also looking at, but also they're looking to develop and enhance what the company's already got in terms of its recurring revenues. So there is quite a steady flow of business here. Again, it provides outsourced IT and communication services over the cloud to small companies and also some public sector organizations. Now, the interims in late November were okay. Revenues and profits were flat. Debt came down. I think that's the big feature of the numbers, as we've discussed many times before. Debt down means risk down, means multiple potentially up. EBITDA margins were going up. I'm always a bit wary of talking about EBITDA. I know Buffett calls it a fraudulent measure because you're sort of trying to exclude some costs that are just fundamental to the business.
Yeah.
But at least long seems to be going in the right direction. Broker FinCap's actually brought out some new estimates, having gone silent on the company for a while, perhaps understandably. They've got it making around 6.5p of earnings for this year, and maybe the dividend coming back in March 2019. So it's on about 16 times earnings. It's actually begun to run quite strongly if you look at the chart, interestingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's now on about 15, 16 times earnings, which is no bargain, but earnings are by no means where they could be. So in that respect, it's a high-risk stock because you've still got the accounting issues to be thoroughly resolved to the regulator's satisfaction. But on the face of it, underneath there, there's a solid business, and the lower the debt goes, potentially the higher the share price can go.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's the last kind of update you want, is the company to say, oh, listen, just two changes from our last report. And that's assets are not worth as much, and debt is worth a lot more.
Yeah, it doesn't get much worse than that, I'm afraid to say, no.
It's the wrong way around completely.
It is.
Okay, cool. What's next, Ross?
Zaffinity. We first looked at this in September, and it was about 165p. It sort of moved on to sort of 185, 190 since, which is nice. And remember, it provides support and administration to defined benefit pension schemes for those who are lucky enough to have one. So it helps the trustees check there's enough money in there. It makes sure the payments go to the right people. It keeps all the records, provides all the communications. This is complex stuff. It's something that you simply can't get wrong. And so it's providing an extremely important service. Now, two bits of news here. The first half numbers have come out since you and I had our sort of Christmas breaks. Revenues were up a little bit. Profits were up very, very strongly. And an interim dividend was paid. So that's all well and good. And perhaps more fundamentally, the company's announced an acquisition for £153 million, Punter Southall Group. It's an actuarial consultant, an investment consultant, and a pensions administrator. It's paying in cash and stock. It's actually just completed as of this week, as of annual general meeting approval, a £70 million rights issue priced at 170p. It's also raising some debt to pay for the acquisition. And it is now really, certainly in using their term, the number one pure play pensions consultant in the UK. And given the importance of pensions to everybody, you'd like to think that's a pretty good place to find yourself in.
Yes, and it's XAF is the ticker there.
XAF on AIM, yes. Based in Reading, market cap's about 280 million quid now, I think.
Cool, it's looking a bit toppy on the share price though at the moment. Really, pushing up there to 195, what is it today, 190-odd, yes.
You would think there'd be a bit of indigestion after now that the rights issue was closed, and the deal actually, the acquisition closes on the 11th of January. So yeah, you might want to wait for this one just to sit and digest for a bit, but the story still feels okay.
Lovely, and the third one, is it Thrissa?
Thrissa, THS, AIM quoted again, market cap about 270 million. Full year figures came out just late November to December. Remember, it's a chrome miner. I mean, what's interesting about this is it's got virtually no debt, strong free cash flow, and it's just jacked up its dividend from 1 cent a share to 5 cents a share for the full year. Ooh. And it's going to increase going forward its payout ratio from 10 to 15%. So you've got a stock on a single-digit PE, which you could say for a miner is probably about right in some ways, but with a 2.5% yield that's got potential to go up. Share price has been all over the place in the last 12 months, from 80p to 160, back to 80, and now it seems to be rising again. Why is it going back up? Well, first of all, it's increased the dividend. It's sticking to its production targets of 150,000 ounces of platinum group metals for this year and 1.4 million tonnes of chrome ore. And commodities right now are in the van. You know, we've seen this week palladium sit an all-time high. Zinc's at a 10-year high. Aluminium's at a multi-year high. Oil's at a 3-year high. And this is all, again, part of this global reflation trade. If anything, commodities are outperforming equities right now, which does speak that somebody somewhere thinks inflation's coming. Your risks are clearly still there. Well, the metals prices could go down and the global reflation trade could go wrong. And South Africa is, let's face it, not an easy place to do business. Yeah. Now, we've obviously had the South African African National Congress election. Jacob Zuma looks like he's going to be booted out. And the new man coming in, whose first name is Cyril and whose second name I cannot pronounce, he's going to try and come in and clean things out, and I wish him the very best of luck with that. So if South Africa is perceived to be an easy... Cyril Ramaphosa. So if Ramaphosa can come in and get everything sorted out, then that makes South Africa an easier place to do business, all well and good. But the fact at the moment is, it's not an easy place to do business. The Eskom, the utility, the electricity supply is in a mess. The electricity supply is difficult, which for a miner is not good. Labour relations are strained. So generally, so there are issues there. So again, it's a risky one, but at the moment, momentum in platinum, in precious group, the platinum group metals looks good. Company's on target to make its production forecast, and it's actually paying a decent dividend, generating yield, and for a miner, very rarely, doesn't have much debt, which can be no bad thing.
Lovely. Palladium at an all-time high. I find that quite interesting, because I'm in a company that is PGM, sort of, it's going to be a PGM miner, and so and predominantly palladium, so that's quite interesting.
There you go. I think that's been going up just because people have been sort of switching from diesels back to petrol cars, and so that's more catalytic converters and things like that, though. Clearly, you've got to mind your eye, because the UK and US car sales numbers are expected to drop this year, so you need to be a little bit careful there, maybe.
Yeah. Excellent stuff for us, but I read somewhere, a stat somewhere saying 90% of cars will still be internal combustion sort of petrol engines in 2025, which I'm surprised at. I thought it would be less than that, but I mean, that's...
I guess it's the issue of, you know, with hybrid and electrics, it's, you know, the relative cost of purchasing the car relative to the running cost, and then with electrics, it's, you know, where's all the charging kit coming from? I think that's still... Yeah. You know, I've got a friend who owns a Tesla. You know, he sits in his garage. You know, when he comes to visit us in Brighton, he brings his Audi with him because he says, "Oh, well, I want to faff about recharging the thing." So, that's still a bridge that's got to be crossed, I think.
Yeah, yesterday I was in the sort of town centre, and the wife popped into a shop. I was waiting for her, and this guy came to his car in front of me. I didn't realise it was a Tesla, but all of a sudden he just clicked this button, and the gullwing doors opened, and I thought that looks good. And he just clipped his baby into the back seat, which is in one of these car seats, and then clipped him again back down. I thought, that's cool. And,
very impressive.
I remember Elon Musk demonstrating that. Even if you park very close to a car in front, the doors sensor how... if you're in a tight space, for example, the doors will sensor how close the car is to either side of you, and the gull wings just reach up in a more narrow space. It's very clever. You know?
Wow, that is clever. There you go.
It is futuristic, very futuristic. I like that. But I don't know if that's worth paying a big chunk of change for and not being able
for the stock. I wouldn't. Car or the stock?
Both, I suppose.
Yeah, there you go. Well, there you go. That's the issue, I guess. I guess the Model S is going to be a lot cheaper, isn't it? But he seems to be having trouble making those at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. The one that's affordable, they can't make. They can't get out there. So we'll see. Yeah. Cheers, Russ. I'll speak next week.
Thank you. I look forward to it. Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is market analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell. You all right, Connor?
Very good, thank you.
I don't want to bang on too much about Christmas and New Year, but it was all right for you? Anything?
Yeah,
you
know? Very good, thanks. Very relaxing. Yeah. Sort of what I needed, just a forced time of sitting down and not doing anything.
Yeah, do you know what? I find that not relaxing. I don't know. It's almost like Christmas. You're forced into sort of having a good time, eating lots. I don't mind eating lots, but I can only do so much of it. You know, and after a while, I'm bored with it. And so I get get unhappy over Christmas because it's just doing something I don't want to do. You know, I mean, you're forced to, nothing else you can do. But anyway, all right. So for people who've not heard you before, Connor looks at the bigger market cap companies that are reporting next week, so who is reporting, Connor?
It's a fairly busy week for retailers, especially those that may have had, you know, an interesting Christmas. First up, we've got Majestic Wine, which obviously is going to be hoping that people were, you know, buying lots and lots of alcohol over Christmas. It actually ended up, it had a few hairy periods in 2017, but overall it ended up being a pretty strong year. I think it rose 41% across the year, hit a 17-month high in early December. Much of that growth sort of came in the last couple of months of the year after its half-year figures in November. I think pre-tax profit, adjusted pre-tax profit, was up like it basically rose the amount it was. Like the year before, it had been flat, really, whereas this year it came in at 6.8 million, which is a pretty, you know, pretty large jump for a company of its size. It saw a 5.7% increase in revenue to 217 million. Underlying sales were up 4.2%. Naked Wines, one of its divisions, you know, the company it acquired a few years ago, when it sort of had a bit of a shake-up, that was very strong. It said it achieved profitability in all three of its geographical markets. It was especially impressive in the US. Sales were up 9.9% in the US. That's its biggest market. Majestic Retail still grew despite what the company labeled as a tough market. I think there are still issues with like Majestic Wholesale, or whatever it's called. But overall, very, very positive. I think CEO Rowan Gormley, he was very, very positive. He said it was time to put the foot on the gas and accelerate growth. And investors really bought into those comments. I think it rose 22% in the week following those comments in November. Mm-hmm. In terms of this week, I think, again, it's the kind of company that you would think, you know, common sense really, that it would benefit quite a lot over the Christmas period. People either gifting wine or, you know, buying in a few crates of wine for when the family come round. I think it's got some tough comparables. Last year, over Christmas period, sales were up 12.4% at a constant exchange rate. So investors will be looking for similar levels of growth this time around. But our clients are thinking that they're buying around the 450 mark. I think they're looking for it to have a pretty strong Christmas and you know, sound pretty positive. Obviously, they're going to be looking for signs of that acceleration that the CEO mentioned in November. But yeah, like I said, our clients are positive around the stock heading into the report next Tuesday.
Yeah, I don't see the traction here in Majestic Wines. I'm just thinking, there's a lot of competition, isn't there? I don't know what kind of wine they sell. I mean, I'm maybe not an expert in this field, but they're a retailer, like I say. And there's a lot of competition, like supermarkets and everywhere. I'm just flabbergasted how their sales have done so well. I've obviously known nothing about it.
The company themselves maybe mentioned places like Aldi. You know, obviously Aldi had a fantastic Christmas. I think it ends up, what was it, sales in the UK were up like 10, they were 10 billion for the first time, 10 billion pounds. So there is things like that, especially in the current climate where, you know, you said in the second half of 2017 you had people's wages being squeezed quite a lot, that maybe has it lost out to cheaper places like Aldi and Lidl and some of the other supermarkets. But like I said, you know, its figures in November were pretty strong, and that was still for a period that would have included some of that economic uncertainty and falling real wages. But yeah, obviously there is room for doubt here, I think.
Yeah, well, they are pricey. They're not like they're considering the 6 months. So let's say 7 million. They earned 14 for the thing. Yeah, it's like a PE of 327. Yeah, they are like a PE of almost 20, I think, private, you know, price earnings. So they're not cheap, really, a cheap share. So, surprise, yeah. Not a bit too rich for me. A bit too much bubbles for me there. Okay, what else is reporting there, Connor?
We've got Marks and Spencer's on Thursday. Obviously, already this week we've had Next and Debenham. Sort of Next wasn't great, but it was better, far, far, far better than what people were expecting, even though it still had, you know, a fairly ugly decline on the high street. And obviously, Debenhams was awful.
Yeah.
Debenhams, I think, is going to have a really tough year.
I think Next are very clever at being doom mongers before the report. They throw everything in the doom reports, and then all of a sudden they surprise the upside a little bit, which is not too bad. I prefer a company that basically under promises and over delivers rather than the other way around. Yeah. You know, so Debenhams had a nightmare, didn't they?
They themselves had even mentioned in their last report before the Christmas one that this may seem very negative, but we're being cautious. So yeah. I think they're very aware of what messages they send across with each update.
Do you know what? In my inbox today, I get emails. I don't know where it's from, but obviously shares related and bigger stocks and some broker forecast or comment. And one of them said they sell Debenhams. I thought, wow, you get paid for that kind of research, do you? Debenhams has been in a downtrend for like 4 years, and no improvement. They had a really bad update over Christmas, and now he's saying sell. Mate, it's too late. It's like 4 years too late for that. And I thought, they're still getting paid handsomely for that kind of piece of advice. Okay, go for it. Marks and Spencer's, what's happening
there? Yeah, Marks and Spencer's, they had at points in 2017, it looked like things were doing all right, especially in the first half of 2017, but then things sort of unraveled a bit in the second half. It's half-year figures in November. there was a lot of good there. Revenue was up 2.6% to 5.1 billion. Pre-tax profit jumped from 25.1 million to 118.3 million. It said there was encouraging signs in the struggling, the normally struggling clothing and home department. Like for likes for the half year was still down 0.7% in the department, but that is an improvement from the, I think they were down 1.2% in the first quarter and then 0.1% in the second quarter. So that's, you know, there's a different signs of improvement there. However, there's sort of issues around its food division. Like it said that, you know, whilst I think investors were probably happy that M&S said it was accelerating the closure of its underperforming clothing department, the fact that it also at the same time said it was slowing the expansion of its Simply Food stores, you know, something that has normally been seen as the saving grace for M&S. Yes. And sort of saying that in the uncertain environment, it wouldn't be wise to open a significant pipeline of new stores, and said, sort of pointed to the food gross margins falling 130 basis points due to increased input cost inflation and trying to limit how much of that it passes on to consumers. I think investors were a bit shocked that it decided to slow down its Simply Food expansion. I think food like-for-likes were down 0.1%. You know, they haven't been too positive in a while, so that sort of dragged it down in November. I think again, obviously, in terms of what it posts next Thursday, I think the clothing, I just can't imagine the clothing side of things really getting a Christmas boost, because I can't imagine people buying Christmas presents at M&S in terms of clothing. It strikes me as far more of a practical clothing shop than something you would maybe gift. However, the food side of things, you know, is sort of the opposite of that. Is the kind of thing that maybe if people don't normally go to it would maybe splurge out on it at Christmas. So I think investors are going to be really disappointed if the food side of things doesn't see some pretty healthy figures on Thursday. I think that is where the reaction's going to lie, in the food side of things and the clothing department, because, you know, obviously any good news in the clothing department, if it can perhaps reduce that like-for-like sales decline, then, you know, that will please investors. But I do think the focus is going to be on the food division, given what it said in November and where its strengths, I guess, lie over the Christmas period.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Right now, we're at the moment, the chart, £3.10. And I do feel like, you know, Marks & Spencer's, along with a lot of, sort of high street retailers like Next, I think on a gradual decline, and the share price is reflecting that, of course, but it's finding where the bottom is, really, where they can become, you know, a good buy, a bargain share again. And at £3.10, then you could argue it's pretty much all priced in there, because this is like now hitting lows back. We sold our season in 2011, you know? This is the levels of 2011, so it's been up to £6. So it's half that. So again, how much further can it go?
Our clients have been buying around the £3 mark. I think they're looking, you know, obviously there was some extraction around M&S after the next figures. Mm. Obviously, then it pulled back off the Debenhams numbers. But I do think it's probably a bit closer to Next than Debenhams. No, I guess it has some ugly figures in the past. But yeah, like I said, our client's buying around £3. I think they're hoping for some food positivity on Thursday.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they are, like I said, trying to refresh the brand all the time, to jiggle it around. And I do feel, yeah, Debenhams is a bit old now, and there we are. It needs a refresh. Cool. Anything else, Connor?
Yeah, finally, we got Boohoo on Thursday. Yeah. Sort of the opposite kind of story to the likes of Debenhams.
Well, this is
and
the
Next
new era, isn't it, really? New era of retail online. This is where, this is still in the march, really, from the people like Mark Spencer's and Next, isn't it? Because if you look at the chart here, literally, back 2015, it was 25 pence. It's been a 10-bagger, pretty much. It was just pulled back, but it is around about 2.14. But, yeah, it's going well, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, no, you could even say its standards are so high that perhaps 2017 was a tad disappointing from a market's perspective, just because it still rose 40% on the year, but by the end of the year it did pull back from the 270 all-time highs in June, I think it was, and then, you know, it hit 262 or the 260 level towards the end of September. So the fact it pulled back below the £2 mark by the end of 2017 was a bit of a disappointment. However, it's not really through any fault of Boohoo's. I think sort of investors, perhaps especially in September after its half-year figures, were, Boohoo had set the bar so high that investors were maybe going to be displeased whatever it posted. You know, revenue was still up 106% to 262.9 million. And that broke down as sort of a 43% increase for the Boohoo brand to 182 million. A 289% rise at Pretty Little Thing to 72.7 million, which sort of the company took over last year. You know, it's a bit of nepotism because the company's owned by the son of Boohoo's founder. But obviously it's paying off. You know, that's really healthy revenue growth. It's the kind of brand you see advertised on the tube all the time, like plastered walls, plastered with adverts for the brand. And it's obviously paid off. And then there's sort of a slight £8.4 million contribution from Nasty Gal, which was another one of his recent acquisitions. Pre-tax profit for the half year was up 41% to £20.3 million. It raised its guidance for full year revenue, and now it expects growth of 80% from the previously expected 60%. That's a pretty hefty increase on its guidance. However, it fell like 17% on the day of those results, found itself, I think, like 8.5 month lows a couple of months later. It sort of gradually trickled lower. After that initial plunge, it gradually trickled lower over the next 2 months. That's mainly due to a fall in gross margins. I think it was down from 55.3% to 53.3% as Boohoo spent more money on pricing and promotions and advertising and things like that. And I think that's what, I think maybe investors were just looking for the chink in Boohoo's armor and perhaps overreacted to it slightly, given the strength of its figures. So I think that's why we've seen heading into next week's update, we've seen our clients really heavily buying Boohoo around that 210 mark, 215 mark. I think they're looking for it. It's fallen off of the highs it saw in 2017. There's room for it to bounce again if its Christmas figures are as strong as it should be. I think in terms of the BDO reported the other day that online sales in the week up to Christmas Eve, we're up 40%. So if Boohoo even gets a bit of that, then it should be a very healthy Christmas report from Boohoo. Yeah. I guess the only danger is, you obviously, like I was saying, the bar is so high for Boohoo that the slightest miss will have, a disproportionate reaction from investors.
Yeah, and I noticed some of the directors have been buying quite a few grand worth of shares, you know, in the last couple of months, haven't they? So they've got the Ian McDonald, non-executive director, purchased 25,000 shares at 173, and the CFO as well. What did she purchase? A bit more than that. The CFO, purchased 14,000 shares at around about the same price in December the 8th, both of them. So obviously they think it's a bit of a bargain there. There we go. Connor, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak
thanks
next week.
Much. Yeah, talk next week. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, it's time for lessons learned from investors and traders. Today, I've got three here. I'll do quite a few of these every day. Depends how many I get. So the first one, learn a trend following system to help you know when to buy and when to sell. That's from Nick Trades, of course, on the podcast every day. Thanks for that, Nick. Next one, shares are not your friend. Dump them when necessary. Kev from BD. Yeah, I agree that. I see people obsessing about certain companies. And even when the story, changes, and they still obsess with them. And it's just, confirmation bias, essentially. Be careful of that. And the third one, go for proven board of directors with proven assets, then stick with your conviction if the story hasn't changed and buy the dips. That's from Limpet Teeth there. Thanks to those guys and ladies and gentlemen. And by all means, submit your own there on the link at the blog. All right, top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours are at five, Regal Petroleum, big rise today, covered the chart with Nicola Duke earlier, RPT. At four, Park Mead Group, PMG. At three, Symphony Environmental, SYM. At two, GGP. And number one, most followed company, very popular of late, Fast Forward Innovations. I know a lot of guys there who have invested, trying to get me invested. FFWD, but I've said, listen, it's risen very quickly, doubled the last 5 days. I've missed that move. I will not chase a price ever. All charts, all share prices come back and consolidate. And that's the time to buy it, not on the top of a spike. Someone said it's not a spike. I said, well, listen, I'm happy to be wrong, but I'll sit and watch from the sidelines. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm not talking about some buys, by the way, one of my recent buys, Symphony Environmental, SYM. There's a lot of big story about plastic coffee cups and the latte levy today. And apparently MPs will impose a 25 pence tax or levy on plastic coffee cups, because obviously plastic, we're drowning in it pretty much, or the fish are in the sea. But I'm thinking, well, Symphony Environmental seem to have a solution to that. It's a massive problem, And of course, the solution could be worth a lot of money if it's applied. And another of my recent buys, actually, Kryptonite 1, KR1. It's on the Next Exchange, can be bought via an ISA, though. Doing very well today, about 20%. But it invests in cryptocurrencies. And this is the easy way to get exposure to blockchain, I think, in cryptocurrencies, rather than having to set up odd accounts and learn a new way, because it's all about transferring money via cryptocurrency. It's not easy. It's not second nature, you know. It's hard work and you get nerd. And so rather than get involved in cryptocurrency trading, I've taken the short route. Let the professionals do it. KR1, Crypto1, let them invest, and I just invest in them. Easier. But it's had a big rise today, which is nice. Okay. Top 5 most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours were: at 5, Greatland Gold, GDP, exercise of options. At 4, Premier Africa Minerals, that's RHA update and proposed Zulu Lithium listing. At 3, Audio Boom Group, contract wing. At 2, Metal Tiger, Botswana Copper Silver Project, record high grade intersection at T3 deposit. And at 1, Motive Bio, MTFB, the title is Motive to Participate in Panel Discussion. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados. Have a nice weekend. There should be a weekend podcast, hopefully, if we get it recorded.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.